The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
For more than a decade, he's been Philadelphia's destination for news, opinion, and passion.
My husband and I listen to your show all the time, and we just love it.
Love your show.
I think you're a wonderful combination of information, humor, and faith. I just really appreciate you being on the air.
It's a beautiful day.
This is Philadelphia's Morning Answer with Chris DeGaulle on Philadelphia's AM 990 The Answer and 990theanswer.com.
Howdy. Good morning. You can tell my voice is a lot better. I took a lot of, I took ivermectin. No. I did not do that. Not that there's anything wrong with it. Hi, good morning, everybody. This is Christine Flowers sitting in for the great Chris DeGaulle. It is my second day in this hallowed, honored seat. I'm here with my buddy Eddie, and we are going to have another 3 hours packed with guests and commentary and hopefully your phone calls, which, by the way, you can call the show at 610-850-0990, 610-850-0990. I mean, we've got a really great show. I've got my buddy Dan Cerucci coming in at 7. I've got the exceptional Emerald Robinson coming in at 7:30. I'm so excited. I have some things I want to ask her about Afghanistan. We have Ben Manis, who's going to be in the 8 o'clock hour. And yesterday, if you were listening in, you heard me interview. Actually, I didn't interview. She just spoke. She was fabulous. I didn't even have to ask her any questions. Representative Martina White from the Great Northeast. And we talked about Chuck Peruto. And lo and behold, magically, Eddie gets me Chuck Peruto for today's show in the 8:30 segment. So we're going to be able to actually talk to Chuck and find out what his agenda is, what his perspective is, what his policy platform is, and how we can help him beat Larry Krasner. So there's a lot to unpack. But for the first hour, it's just you and me and Eddie and the sponsors and the weather and John Butterworth and AOC. Because what is a day without a particular special present from Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. I cannot say her name without saying Alexandria. I love that. Alexandria. So, you know, you all know about the Texas abortion law. We talked about that yesterday. And I know I'm going to be talking about it more, probably in this show. And I'm probably going to write about it more. And so, you know, you might get tired of hearing about it. But there's so many different aspects and layers to unpeel, like an onion, with respect to this particular law. And so AOC, the inimitable AOC, she's everywhere, people. She was on, I think it was CNN yesterday, and she was explaining why she is just so upset about this law, you know, particularly because it only gives women, well, I'm saying women, it only gives certain creatures of God, 6 weeks within which to find out whether or not they're pregnant. And, you know, you do know that AOC is a biologist. I mean, she has a PhD in, no, I'm joking. But, you know, she is presumes to have all of this knowledge about bodily functions and, you know, scientific fact, scientific truth. And so she's giving this interview And she wants to explain why the Texas law is just so horrible and so unfair. Eddie, do we have that audio?
Yes, we do.
Oh, can we hear it, please?
Sure, sure.
Thank you.
Well, I find Governor Abbott's comments disgusting, and I think there's twofold. One, I don't know if he is familiar with a menstruating person's body. In fact, I do know that he's not familiar with a woman, with a female or a menstruating person's body, because if he did, he would know that you don't have 6 weeks. Is that quote unquote 6 weeks? And I'm sorry we have to break it down on, you know, break down biology 101 on national television, but in case no one has informed him before in our life, in his life, 6 weeks pregnant means 2 weeks late for your period. And 2 weeks late on your period for any person with a menstrual cycle can happen if you're stressed, if your diet changes, or for really no reason at all. So you don't have 6 weeks. That's first things first. The second area of this, when he talks about going after rapists and this language of him that he uses is about getting rapists off the streets. The majority of people who are raped and are who are sexually assaulted by someone that they know. And these aren't just predators that are walking around the streets at night. They are people's uncles. They are teachers. They are family friends. And when something like that happens, it takes a very long time, first of all, for any victim to come forward. And second of all, when a victim comes forward, they don't necessarily want to bring their case into the carceral system. They don't want to re-traumatize themselves by going to court. They don't necessarily all want to report a family friend to a police precinct, let alone in the immediate aftermath of the trauma of a sexual assault. And so while some victims do use that recourse, and that is something that is completely available, and if that is part of their process, that's great. But this idea that we're going to, quote unquote, end rape when the same type of, frankly, rape culture and the same type of misogynistic culture that informed this abortion law to begin with is also, you know, those beliefs are held by the governor himself and this Texas state legislature. Frankly, there are many people in power, as we know from the Me Too movement, that commit sexual assault, that help their friends cover up these crimes. And some of them even serve in the same state legislatures that are voting on these anti-choice bills. It's awful.
Okay. So, Eddie, can I tell everybody the tweet that you responded to my tweet when I sent you the article about AOC?
Yeah, sure.
I sent an article to Eddie this morning because I wanted it printed out so I could talk about it. And I got back this tweet from Eddie. This is the world my kid's going to grow up in. Shoot me, LOL. And I... It's like, yeah, I agree. You know, Eric Erickson made a great point. He said, AOC kind of got tripped up on the language. She went from woman, she tried to say that and kind of like, and then just like female. And then she went to menstruating person. She went to person. So, folks, I know I'm really preaching to the choir with this audience. I know that you guys listening out there are in full agreement that the woman is whacked. There is just, she is representative of a whacked movement. I am as politically incorrect as you could possibly be, and I really don't want to get into the whole transgender issue because I will say that I don't know all of the nuances of it. But I know one thing, and I know that there is no such thing as a menstruating person. I mean, well, okay, I am a person. I am a female. Females menstruate. That's it. There's no other form of menstruating creature on the face of the earth. And not all females menstruate, obviously. You know, you move to a certain stage in your life and that joy is over. But men do not menstruate. Biological men do not menstruate. And I do not care if you are a biological female that thinks that she is a male. You are a female. So if you menstruate, you are a female. You are a woman. And for AOC to be dancing around and tripping around this language is just the most recent example of how we have been turning ourselves into pretzels in order to accommodate, in order to make certain groups of people feel better about themselves. And in the process, we are losing ourselves. This whole idea that now, when I get an email from a professional, from other attorneys, when I get emails from other attorneys, they have their pronouns in the email. And I'm sorry, if you send me an email with your pronouns in it, I'm going delete, delete, delete. I don't even care if that email is telling me that I won the Publisher's Clearinghouse sweepstakes. Delete. I'm not interested in someone who is so confused that they need to explain to me how I should address them. All right? Again, this was not to address the entire transgender issue. This was to address AOC and what an idiot she is. And yeah, I mean, if I ever do anything in my future where I show myself to be truly idiotic, I hope that you will preserve that clip. I hope that people will run that. I hope that when she runs for higher office, which you know she's going to do, she's going to run for a Senate seat in New York eventually. If she can schnooker enough people into believing that she's actually a serious person. This clip is going to come back. And she's going to have to address whether she truly believes that men can menstruate. Maybe we should just change the word to womenstruate. I mean, just to clarify it for people who are confused about it. My goodness. Yes! Helen Reddy! I am woman. Or I am person who menstruates. We will be back. This is Christine Flowers sitting in for the great Chris DeGaulle on Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer.
Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer. Everything you need is waiting for you at 990theanswer.com.
We hold these truths to be self-evident. All men and women created by God, you know the thing.
We ask it in the name of the monotheistic God, Brahma, and God known by many names, by many different faiths. A man and a woman.
But make no mistake, there will be a trial, and when that trial ends, senators will have to decide if they believe Donald John Trump incited the erection.
Welcome back. This is Christine Flowers sitting in for Chris DeGaulle on Philadelphia's AM 990. The Answer. Eddie, thank you for that little montage over there. That was pretty interesting. Democrats really trip themselves up when they try and be verbally correct, you know, politically verbally correct. So what was Chuck Schumer trying to say?
Chuck Schumer was trying to say he wanted to get the word insurrection in as many times as he could. Unfortunately, the first time he tried it, he just couldn't get it out. You know?
Couldn't get it out. Couldn't get it in another direction. Wow. Poor. You know, I'll tell you. Unbelievable. Oh, and the amen, a woman part was really rather ridiculous. And was that guy a pastor? Is he a chaplain?
It was a congressman from a while back. This is an older clip from the past year, but I have to find it. I think he was a preacher of some sort, but a congressman.
Yeah, no, I do remember that. I remember when it happened. I remember thinking, is this a comedy stick that he's doing? It's just ridiculous. Anyway, so my column in the Delco Times tomorrow is sort of about the Texas abortion law, but not entirely. It's about an aspect of the abortion law, because I already wrote about the abortion law for last Sunday's column. That's the one, remember I told you, where some irate readers started to sign me up to all of these websites like Emily's List and Planned Parenthood and people for menstruating people for reproductive rights. And my favorite, as I said, was Catholics for Choice. And I think I told you yesterday that my response to them, well, the first two words of it, the off part you can talk about. You can't talk about the first word that I said. And then the last word that I used was heretics. But anyway, the column that I wrote for tomorrow has to deal with the reason I think that most people object to this particular law. Not AOC. AOC is angry because it only gives you 6 weeks within which to determine you're pregnant or not. And ladies, I'm sorry. If you can't figure it out within 6 weeks, within 2 weeks of a missed period, I mean, check it out. It's not, you know, neurosurgery here. But the problem that a lot of people have with this particular law, including some conservatives that I've spoken to, is the novel aspect which allows private citizens to essentially sue abortion providers and anyone who, quote, aids and or abets someone attempting to get an abortion. This is a novel aspect of the law. This has never been included, as far as I know, in any kind of abortion legislation. And it's ingenious because it actually, this is the reason that the Supreme Court allowed the law to go into effect and didn't enjoin its application, because there really is, you don't know who to sue in this situation, meaning you don't know who is the person that's going to be suing the abortion clinics or the people who are aiding and abetting someone trying to get an abortion. It could be anybody. It could be your neighbor. It could be someone in the community. And that has people riled up. That has people apoplectic. That has people using this kind of language like, oh, we've got neighbors spying on neighbors. We have people ratting out other people. We have people who are acting like East German Stasi neighbors and spies and this just sounds really, really familiar to me, like recent memory. Have maybe I'm just imagining it, but were there any situations recently where liberals in particular were spying on neighbors and other people?
Funny you should ask, Christine. In 2020, Governor Wolf, he put together the Commonwealth Civilian Coronavirus Corps. Now, initially, it was of Pennsylvania, but if you notice that the acronym would then become CCCCP. So he changed it. So now it's just CCCCC. But what essentially this was for contact tracers to reach out and say, hey, you know, you, Christine, have been in close contact with someone that had coronavirus. It's like, well, how do you know that? Oh, it's simple. Well, there's an app that we created where, you know, you can just log on and put in your information and say, and turn your location on. And, oh, here we are in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania somewhere. And it was somewhere near you. Well, how did you get my information? I don't know. You could essentially officially snitch on your neighbor during the early. This was back in May when he started the coronavirus corps. Now how he pitched it was, this is a chance for unemployed Pennsylvanians to become a part of the corps, the Commonwealth Corps, the CCCCP.
Oh, Tovarish, das vidanya. Oh, wow. Yeah. So that's exactly what I was referring to. That, and then And then the community got into the private sector got into the game with, I remember seeing signs, you know, if you see something, say something. Now, these are old signs. Many of them are old signs talking about, they kind of date back to the old post September 11th days when we needed to be very vigilant, which I understand. You needed to, if you saw something, if you saw an unattended bag or what, all over Amtrak. But now this was being used as an excuse to rat out people who were in stores without masks on, or restaurants that weren't policing the draconian mandates of certain cities, including our beloved Philadelphia. And I remember watching that. I remember looking at all of this happening and thinking, this is being served up as some kind of public health measure. But it really has tones of and aspects of the Stasi, of an East Germany police state, where you yourself are charged with maintaining order. Now, in my piece, I make this parallel, and it is legitimate then to attack the Texas abortion law by saying, oh, look what it does. It forces neighbors, or it allows neighbors to go after other people. It allows you to snitch on people. And if you are consistent in having criticized the pandemic measures, then you know what? I respect you. If you have a problem with both what happened, you know, under the Texas law and what our community and our leaders, our local officials were trying to do, or were actually successful in doing during the pandemic. You know what? I give you props, because you're, at least you're being consistent. But if you were one of those people who were all in for the snitching and the contact tracing and the CCCCP, as Eddie was talking about, and all of these special levels of control and checking and confirmation and looking over your shoulder and looking over someone else's shoulder, if you were okay with that, but you have a problem with a community member, a resident of a neighborhood where an abortion clinic is taking place, you have a problem with that person suing the abortion clinic, or at the very least informing the authorities that abortions are taking place, particularly when abortion has been criminalized after the sixth week in Texas. It's a law, people. It's a law. It was passed by the legislature, which was voted in by the people of Texas. You have a problem with that, then you're a rank, vile hypocrite. And I have a sense that the vast majority of the people who supported all of these COVID protocols and measures, all of these pandemic mandates, are the same people like AOC out there screaming right now about, it's a police state. You know, we're going after these poor, poor people who all they want to do is kill their babies. Why are you stopping them from killing their babies? Give them a little bit more time to kill their babies. You know?
More of Philadelphia's Morning Answer with Chris DeGaulle on Philadelphia's AM 990 The Answer and 990theanswer.com.
Welcome back. This is Christine Flowers sitting in for Chris DeGaulle on Philadelphia's AM 990 The Answer. The numbers, if you want to call at any point up until 9 o'clock, which is when I will be leaving you, is 610-850-0990. 610-850-0990. I want to talk about Monica Lewinsky, but before I do that, I just want to sort of do a tie up the conversation that Eddie and I were just having before the break. I don't believe I mentioned this on air. I have written about it, but there was, you know, speaking of ratting people out, there is a restaurant in Wayne that had put on Instagram and on their Facebook and on their social media pages that they were going to essentially require vaccine cards for you to be able to eat at their restaurant. Remember when that happened last month, a bunch of restaurants came out to, you know, a lot of people were saying, oh, this is wonderful. We love you. It's really great that you're doing this, that, you know, you're only letting vaccinated people eat at your establishment. So this particular restaurant announced that. And it got a lot of people who were patting them on the back and, you know, oh, you're so great. Well, there were some people who disagreed with them. One of the people who disagreed with them happened to be a young college student at St. Joe's University. And she wrote a comment. I saw the comment. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't profane. It wasn't obscene. It was just something along the lines of, good luck with that. I can't wait to see how your business flourishes. You know, sarcasm, millennial sarcasm.
Sure.
You know, Gen Z sarcasm. So, you know, good on her. So the owners of this restaurant actually, in the response, this was on either Instagram or Twitter, but it was, you know, one of the social media apps where you could tag someone, okay? They responded to her and they tagged St. Joe's University. And they said, huh, you know, I wonder how the president and the administration feel about having a student who feels this way, who thinks this way. And then they later on, they came out and they said, you know, our establishment is frequented by the president and the vice president and administrators at St. Joe's. And we're all looking at this, you know, we being friends, other women. I actually was alerted to this from the Facebook website, Conservative Women of the Main Line. Yeah. Great, 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 great Facebook group anyway. I'm looking at it, I'm saying, did they just dox this young student? Did these people just dox her? So I wrote a column about it. Of course, I always do. I write a column about everything. And then this restaurant was complaining about, they went on 6ABC and they were complaining about being, oh, they were persecuted. They were being called, they were getting anti-Jewish commentary.
Oh, I'm sure they were.
You know what the anti-Jewish commentary was?
What?
People were saying, wow, requiring vaccine cards, that's kind of Nazi-like.
It's the first thing the left goes to every single time. It's either racism, anti-Semitism, whatever it is, that's the first play. And honestly, what this restaurant did, there's a column that Chris wrote a little while ago called "They're Provoking Us."
Yeah. Oh, I read it. It's brilliant. On townhall.com.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's just like, that's exactly what they're doing. That's exactly what's happening. So all of a sudden they pop back with, oh, see, now we're getting anti-Semitic comments on this. Just like, okay.
Oh, yeah. It's bait and switch. It's. I mean, you think they're talking about one thing. You react. And then they circle back, as Jen would say. And they accuse you of being racist, sexist. My favorite part is when I get called one of two things. I get called either a racist xenophobe, you know.
The old standard from 2016.
Right.
Go ahead.
I mean, I've been doing immigration law for 25 years, but that's true.
Yes.
I'm a racist xenophobe.
Of course.
And or I'm a misogynist.
Yes, right.
Because I used to be a person who menstruates. So I guess I can sort of, you know, be outside of myself, and I'm no longer a woman. So I can, you know, be a misogynist. That's my favorite part. Ah, let's take a break. This is Christine Flowers on Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer. Welcome back. This is Christine Flowers sitting in for Chris DeGaul on Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer. In the 7 o'clock hour, I'm going to have my buddy Dan Cerucci come on and talk about Joe Biden's visit to the to the beautiful state of New Jersey, the waterlogged state of New Jersey, and have him give us his opinion about all things Jersey, but particularly with respect to Biden and maybe some misstatements that he might have made. Of course, you know, Joe Biden never misstates anything, never makes any kind of verbal flubs. And then we have the great Emerald Robinson, who's going to be on in 7:30 hour. But right now we have a little bit of time left. And I wanted to address, as I said before the break, I wanted to talk about Monica Lewinsky. You know, I was glued to the television set 23 years ago now, 1998, when the whole Lewinsky scandal broke. I remember very clearly where I was, what I was doing. I know a lot of people today, particularly millennials, really were not aware of what was going on at that point, just as I was not aware of what was happening when JFK was assassinated. There are people who are 10 to 15 years older than I am, and they remember being glued to the television set, being glued to the radio during the funeral and the whole process. But that, for me, that would have been the impeachment process of Bill Clinton, William Jefferson Clinton. And I have to say, you know, a little proviso here. Bill Clinton has grown on me in the years since he was president. I, you know, I'm sure many people in the listening audience will disagree with me, and that's fine. First Amendment, freedom of association, freedom of thought, freedom of speech. I think he did some very good things for the United States. And I think he was one of the last, unlike his wife, he was one of the last non-crazy, non-radical Democrats. Even though I'm sure he was a, you know, very socially liberal, very liberal with his affections as well. But anyway, I do remember the impeachment process, the impeachment period. And I remember watching Monica Lewinsky and thinking, you know, it's a shame what's happening to her. It's a lot for a 24-year-old to have to deal with all of this publicity. But at the same time, I had a really hard time considering her a victim. And I know, you know, there are two groups of people who will disagree with me on this, and they are diametrically opposed in their political leanings. There are the Republicans out there who think of her as a victim because it kind of advances the agenda to go against the Democrats. And so she was sort of a useful vehicle to go after Bill Clinton. And I get that. And I understand that. Then there are the liberals, the women in particular, who are all about women being victimized by the patriarchy. Of course, at the time that this happened, a lot of liberal women remained fairly silent, including the heads of NOW, and, you know, the National Organization for Women, because they liked Bill Clinton because of his policies. And so they weren't quite as critical of him as they should have been. But they, you know, they also would have considered Monica a victim because she was a woman who had been abused by a man. And I always had a problem with the idea. And again, you know, there are people out there saying, yeah, she was an intern. She was a young woman. She was 24. All right. She wasn't 16. She wasn't 12. She wasn't a brownie at summer camp. She was a 24-year-old woman. At the age of 24, I had graduated from law school. All right. 24 may not be, you know, in the full flower of your maturity, but it's old enough to know right from wrong. Monica Lewinsky had an affair with a married man. the fact that the man happened to be the president of the United States made it a national issue, national affair, excuse the pun. But this idea that she was victimized, I've always had a problem wrapping my mind around that. And this was brought back to me yesterday when she was interviewed on, was it the Today Show? And Savannah Guthrie, you know, Savannah Guthrie, she's so empathetic with that overbite of hers. And Savannah Guthrie has no lips. Have you ever noticed that? It's like teeth anchored by a tiny line of lip on either end. But anyway, it just always bothers me when I look at Savannah Guthrie. There's something about her face. But Savannah was empathizing with Monica. And she asked Monica, she said, "Do you think you should be owed an apology?" And Monica kind of gave one of those non-answer answers like, "Yes, I think we should apologize to everyone that we have wronged. I think I should apologize to people I have wronged." But you knew that the underlying, the intent of her comment was, "Damn straight he should apologize to me what that man put me through." And all I kept thinking was, nah, the only person who deserved an apology, and I know you guys out there are going to hate this. The audience is going to be like, "I'm turning this show off. They've got some communist filling in for Chris." But the only person who deserved an apology in that scenario was Hillary Clinton, his wife, you know, because she was the one who was cheated on. I do believe that Paula Jones was a bit more of a victim in this scenario because of what came out about what happened in that hotel room. And I mean, it appears that Paula was not a consensual actor in the relationship. Monica was consensual all the way. Jennifer Flowers, and please understand what my life was like for about, 5 or 6 years after this all broke, because Flowers is not a common last name. It's kind of unusual. I have had people, to this day, I still have people saying, "Hi, Jennifer." And they mean it. They think my name is Jennifer. Misspelled Jennifer, by the way, with a G. Who spells their name Jennifer with a G? It's Jennifer. What the heck is that? But, I mean, Jennifer Flowers was his mistress down in, where was he? Arkansas? Little Rock? Whatever it was, the lounge singer. I mean, she made a great career out of it, and she was fine. And, you know, Monica's dealing with her issues and everything, and I don't wish ill on her. I really, really don't. But the whole idea that she was just this tiny little precious little flower that Bill just plucked off of the honeysuckle bush and just trampled under his big manly foot, I have a problem with that. I mean, she had an affair with a married man, okay? I mean, even if you don't think that that's immoral, which is fine. That's fine if you don't think that. But who apologizes to the mistress? I mean, when, in what world is that okay? And no, don't tell me the world that it's okay in is if the mistress is helping a guy cheat on Hillary Clinton. No, 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 no. All right.
More of Philadelphia's Morning Answer with Chris DeGaulle on Philadelphia's AM 990 The Answer and 990theanswer.com.
Welcome back. This is Christine Flowers sitting in for Chris DeGaulle on Philadelphia's AM 990 The Answer. We have just a couple of minutes. Let's go to the phones. Hi, Steve in Warminster. Thanks for holding.
How you doing, Christine? You know, I had this idea. It's been brewing for a while in my head. All this information coming in about the racial issues, the economy, the Great Reset, they have a title and an umbrella for their stuff. We don't. Why don't we just call it Phase One? In all our well, that's part of Phase One. Phase One Marxism. Just call it Phase One. It puts it under a nice, neat little package because that's what they're doing. What do you think?
Yeah, no, it's actually a really good. It's a good way to define it. I think it's, you know, the old story of the frog that if you put the frog in a pot of boiling water, it'll jump right out because of the shock to the system. But if you put a frog in a pot of cold water and slowly raise the heat It's going to die. It's going to stay in there and it's going to boil to death because it's not going to notice that the heat is rising. So if you do things incrementally, as you're talking about, you can really, you know, achieve your goals, your ends. And it's unfortunate what's happening in society today.
Why don't we call it frog pot?
Frog pot. How about frog one? Phase frog. Phase frog,
yeah,
one.
Frog now, one.
It's true. It's frog one. Frog one. Little amphibian number one. Good call, Steve. I really appreciate it. Well, in the next hour, we are going to have my buddy Dan Cerucci coming on talking about all things Jersey, but really focusing on President Biden's visit to his home state yesterday. So that should be very, very interesting. I want to ask Dan a couple questions also about the gubernatorial race there between Murphy and Cetarelli. I happen to think I'm very impressed with Jack Cetarelli. I love his commercials, and I love the fact that he's really getting into Murphy's face and pointing out some of the things that Murphy has done that are just really beyond the pale. But, you know, first and foremost, I think we need to really focus on our president who visited the waterlogged state of New Jersey. And I truly hope that New Jersey is not going to suffer another catastrophic evening event as it did last week, because as you know, as Eddie and I told you, there are going to be thunderstorms tonight. Hopefully it won't be of the same level as the Ida type storms. But in any event, in the next hour, we're going to have two fantastic people, Dan and then Emerald Robinson. And I am looking forward to that. And then in the 8 o'clock hour, two other guests. So sit tight and we will be back in just a few minutes on Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer.
This is WNTP, Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer, a Salem Media Group station on the NASDAQ at SALM. For more than a decade, he's been Philadelphia's destination for news, opinion, and passion.
Good morning, sir, and thank you for everything you do.
You have been the guy when it comes to truth and sincerity.
Love the podcast.
For decades, scientists have warned of extreme weather. It would be more extreme, and climate change.
This is Philadelphia's Morning Answer with Chris DeGaulle on Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer, and 990theanswer.com.
Welcome back. This is Christine Flowers sitting in for Chris DeGaulle. Chris will be back on Monday, in case you were worried. He will be back embracing his loving and beloved listeners on Monday. But until that point, I will be with you. My name is Christine Flowers, and this is Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer. The numbers, if you want to reach me, are 610-850-0990. Well, yesterday, President Biden visited New York and our neighbor in New Jersey. He visited some of the areas that had been terribly impacted by the remnants of Hurricane Ida. And he had an interesting visit. There is a report in the New York Post, which I love because it really gets the whole Jersey zeitgeist. It says, President Biden on Tuesday traveled to New York and New Jersey to tour areas struck by deadly flooding from Tropical Storm Ida. But he received a hostile welcome from some North Jersey residents who heckled him and flashed middle fingers. If that doesn't say Jersey, nothing does. He also had some problems because apparently he thought that we no longer use the word tornado. He called tornado an antiquated term. Eddie, do you know? I mean, I'm not into these things. What's the updated word for tornado?
I'm still trying to figure that out. It's like we were saying, this word salad that the left tries like to inject into their speeches and whenever they speak publicly. I don't know what the new word for tornado that the left's trying to come up with.
Is it something like really windy event caused by climate change?
No, the looks like a tornado. They don't call them that anymore. That hit the crops and wetlands in the middle of the country and in Iowa, in Nevada, and I mean, it's just across the board.
Yeah, like a tornado, right?
So what? And why do the people in New Jersey who are like drowning care about the cornfields of Iowa? It's like, well, you know, when you go to Iowa, talk about Iowa. When you go to New Jersey, talk about New Jersey.
The best part about this visual, so if you could see the visual of this, so he's speaking in Jersey. Now, the climate change is the big, you know, that's the big pivot from Afghanistan. It's climate change, climate change, climate change.
Oh, because it was abortion, but now we have something else.
Oh, right. I'm sorry. Abortion, too. We can't, it's hard to keep up. But he's got all these plastic water, these stacks of plastic bottled water behind him. Now, I'm guessing that's FEMA relief for people in Jersey. I'm just saying, it's like plastic bottles, aren't they a no-no?
Oh, well. Anyway. Well, you know, Eddie, you and I have our opinions on this, but we have someone. I have my dear, dear friend and, you know, always a welcome guest, Dan Cerucci, who is a Jersey boy who's going to help us, who's going to walk us through some of this. Dan, are you there?
Hello, hello.
Hi, good morning.
Hello,
how are you? Danny, Danny.
I'm fine.
What is the word for tornado? Before you get started, do you have the word for tornado that you guys use in New Jersey now?
Well, I've been known as a wordsmith, Christine, but I don't know what the word would be. I mean, maybe I'm in my kitchen right now. I'm thinking maybe whirlpool. I don't know.
I thought that was like Frigidaire. I thought that was a brand of appliance. Oh, gosh. Anyway.
I don't know. I guess I'm going to have to look in my washer, you know, in my clothes washer and see, figure out what the word is. But the other thing is, you know, Biden was in Manville, New Jersey, yesterday, and, you know, he's so woke, I almost expected they would have had to change the name of the town to Personville.
You know? Oh, my God, that's great. That's great. Person who menstruates-ville.
Yeah.
Oh, my Lord. That's right. Now, Manville's in North Jersey, right? Or it's north of Trenton, right?
Yes, I believe it's in Somerset County, yes.
Okay. And you're a South Jersey boy.
I'll tell you this. Jack Cittirelli certainly knows where Manville is, okay? And he knows where all these little towns are in New Jersey because he's, unlike Phil Murphy, he's born and bred in Jersey. He's Jersey through and through, okay?
Yeah.
And the other thing yesterday that really struck me was, you know, Murphy putting his foot in his mouth again and saying when they confronted him, because we're 6 days out from this storm now, Christine, 6 full days out, and nobody seems to have a clue in the Murphy administration. And when they confronted him about, you know, the storm victims that were trapped in their cars, he said of those people, well, maybe they needed to be a little sharper in a crisis.
Oh, my Lord. Oh, my Lord. Blaming the victim.
Listen, Christine, I was trapped in my car once with rising floodwaters. And I can tell you, you go into like a panic, because what happens is that the water rises. And once it rises past about three quarters of your tires, the car shuts down.
Oh, yeah, you're trapped.
Water gets into the electrical system of the car, and you know these cars now have computers in them. And once water gets into that system, the electrical system that controls the whole car, the car shuts down.
That's exactly right. That's a good point. It's the electrical system. You have all of these wonderful, you know, innovations, and then one little glitch and boom, everything is thrown
right.
off.
And I was in such a situation. My car shut down and my car was totaled, and the waters were rising. Thank God a neighbor ran out from his house, and with somebody else, he pushed my car. He told me to put my car in neutral if I could, and pushed my car out of the water. When the tow truck came to tow my car, I said, what the hell happened? He said, Felly, your car's totaled. I said, totaled, but my car's fine. It doesn't look to be anything wrong with it. He said to me, the electrical system is shot. It's done.
Yeah. No, that happens. And I mean, I don't think Biden's ever has driven his own car in 40-some years. I mean, he's been in the Senate for... I was in the sixth grade, Dan, when he became a senator. I think it was 1972. All of my sentient life, I have known of Senator Joe Biden. He's always been there. I doubt he has driven a car. I mean, I give him props for taking Amtrak. He was a big supporter of Amtrak. I love Amtrak. I always take the train. But in terms of actually having to get down and dirty and do his own driving, he doesn't do that. He has no idea what happens when you get stuck in a flood.
I don't think Murphy's done his own driving very much either. I mean, if he's a zillionaire, and he had only recently come back from his villa, his mansion in the foothills of Rome, where he was hiding out this summer. He had only recently come back before the storm, and then it was revealed that shortly after he came back, he borrowed Bon Jovi's helicopter to go to a party in the Hamptons.
That's why I love Citarelli's ads. He does such a great job. They're so well produced. You get a sense of who Citarelli is, a very wry sense of humor that he has. But he also really appears, I mean, he sweats Jersey. He bleeds Jersey. You look at him with those shirt sleeves rolled up to the elbow, and he just looks like a Jersey guy. And that's not a prerequisite for becoming governor of New Jersey. I mean, Chris Christie was similarly like that. But it does give you a sense that this is a person who knows who you are. I don't feel like Tom Wolf, my governor, understands what it is to be a real Pennsylvanian, somebody who has to work for a living. I don't feel that way. And bizarrely enough, even though Ed Rendell was a Democrat, I felt that he actually did understand what it meant to be a working stiff. So it's almost not even a party thing or a partisan thing. It's a personality thing. And Citarelli definitely has it out over Murphy.
The other thing is, Christine, what we look for all the time in public relations, the business that I've been in all my life, is the authenticity factor. Now, Ed Rendell was real. He was authentic. What you see is what you got. He had that quality.
Right.
And the same thing, for better or worse, for a man that I still adore, Governor Chris Christie.
Right.
Authentic, real. What you see, he was exactly the same in private as he was in public. And this is the same quality that Jack Citarelli has. He is real. He is authentic through and through. He doesn't have one face for the public and, one face. And he's not hypocritical like so many of these preachy liberals are. He is real. And we say in public relations, authenticity builds credibility. You cannot have credibility if you're not authentic. Phil Murphy is not authentic.
Well, how's Citarelli polling in New Jersey?
Well, it's funny you should ask, because there's a new poll out now that has the race in a dead heat. Now, this poll, I have to say, was done for the conservative Club for Growth, but it was done by a respected firm, Fabrizio, and it shows that only 1 point separates them. And furthermore, 55%, a majority of New Jersey's likely voters, believe the state is off on the wrong track. And it's driven heavily by independents, who feel New Jersey is off on the wrong track by a 43% margin. The other thing the poll shows is that people who have a negative opinion of Murphy are much more intense and seemingly much more likely to vote. Okay? Independents view the governor unfavorably by 23 points.
Wow.
So
that's significant.
Yeah, so this These are very revealing figures. Now, you won't find these figures in the polls that are released to promote universities that want to get their name on the map, like, for example, the Monmouth poll, because they are weighted and they over-poll Democrats.
Yeah, sure.
And so, yes.
And I think it's really telling because, you know, in a heavily, heavily blue state, you're not going to be able to persuade a lot of sort of institutional Democrats like they have in Philadelphia to vote non-Democrat. But if you can persuade independents, then you have a fighting chance. And I think, wasn't that the reason that Chris Christie was able to win in New Jersey? Because he was able to persuade a large number of unaffiliated voters that he was the better choice?
Exactly. And the other thing is that works in New Jersey is because we're one of only two states to hold this kind of important statewide election this year, the other being Virginia. It's not a big election year. It's not an off-year election like we have on the even-numbered years every 2 years. So it's people aren't focused. So a lot of Democrats do not vote. They do not vote in this election.
Well, that's a good sign. Whenever you can keep Democrats from voting, that's great.
I always feel better when liberals aren't voting.
Oh, so do I.
I think it's just healthier. Not that we want to deprive anybody of the vote, but it's their choice. They have to make the choice to vote.
Yeah, Dan, they're going to call us out for voter suppression. They're going to get this clip and they're going to say, Christine and Dan are trying to suppress the vote.
But it's just a fact. It's just a fact. And it's a very unusual situation in New Jersey this year is that the governor and the entire legislature, the Senate and the House of New Jersey, all of them are up for re-election or up for election. So it is a very, very important election. And you have to remember that it's been 40 years, not since Brendan Byrne, has a Democrat governor been re-elected in New Jersey. Many people don't realize this, but New Jerseyans, when it comes to their governor, they're very funny about this, and it seems particularly like when there's a Democratic president elected the year before, in the year that follows when New Jersey has its gubernatorial election, they invariably pick a Republican.
Well, that's a great sign for Chinarelli. That's a great sign for
Chinarelli. It's a good sign, and it's just that, you know, New Jerseyans are different, Christine. They don't like to be told what to do or be. They also like to surprise people.
Well, the lady who flipped the middle finger at Joe Biden up in North Jersey, but you know, and I think the thing that I like about this race between Murphy and Chinarelli is that Chinarelli is launching a real challenge to the incumbent. You have so many races where there's almost just a lukewarm attempt to unseat an incumbent. The sense that, well, you know, the incumbent is going to win, so we'll just put somebody up sort of pro forma. And it really does appear that Chinarelli is in this to win it. And I mean, he's all over the place. I love the fact that in Southern, the media market, which includes southeastern Pennsylvania, you see these advertisements for him all the time. And I'm thinking, you know, I can't vote for him. I would vote for him if I could. I can't vote for him. But I love the fact that people in my area who might even live in New Jersey, but like my boss who lives in New Jersey but works in Philadelphia, you know, they have that exposure. So I think it's great.
It's a very, you have to remember, it's a very, very expensive state to run in because you have to buy your advertising in two of the most expensive media markets in the country, Philadelphia and New York.
Oh, right. Exactly.
And you need a ton of money to run statewide in New Jersey. Now, bear in mind that the gazillionaire Murphy has only begun to spend his money. After all, that's how he got into the governor's race in the first place, by spending money in the counties to get the endorsement of county chairs to get the governor's nomination of his party, and then spending a ton of money to get elected.
That's how Corzine did it too. Danny, we are up against the clock. Danny, we're really squeezed. I actually want to hold you over. I do have another segment before the end of the half hour. So if you could hold on through the break, we'll come back to you. Can you do that? Okay, great.
Absolutely.
Thank you. This is Christine Flowers sitting in for Chris DeGaulle on Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer. Welcome back. We just have a couple of seconds. Danny, what's your 30,000-foot view of what's happening in the, in the Murphy-Citarelli race and everything else that's going on in New Jersey and how they're reacting to the presidency of Joe Biden right now?
Well, I really think that it's going to come down to, is Jack Citarelli going to have the money that he needs to at least come close to matching the money that Murphy is spending? And I think with the momentum that Jack has built up at this point, and he's really energized a lot of people, I think he's going to be able to do it. I think he's going to be able to go toe-to-toe with Murphy. And another important factor is going to be whatever, however many debates they have, and how Jack does in the debate. And I think he's going to be ready for that, too, because Murphy, especially in recent days, has appeared to be almost as unfocused as Biden. Biden, who said yesterday that we need to go all electric by 2050 so that we can have zero emissions by 2020.
That's crazy.
What the hell was he talking about?
That's crazy. Do you think Murphy's going to get any help from the White House? Meaning, do you think they're going to swoop in and try and buttress his campaign, or do they think it's not really necessary?
A few weeks ago, I might have said to you that help from the White House would be advantageous to him. But if you saw yesterday, there were crowds out booing Biden when he arrived in Manville. There were banners that said "F Biden." There were people giving him the finger. So I actually think that Biden could be a liability. And
so do you think, I mean, you're on the ground. Your antenna are attuned to all things Jersey. You've lived in the state all of your life. You were born there. Is Jersey right now as blue as it's ever been? Or is that something that we're being really fed by the media? Because if there's this affection and an affinity for Jack Citarelli, who clearly is not, you know, center right kind of candidate. If there's that kind of affection, if they were able to elect Chris Christie to two terms, I'm wondering just how blue New Jersey really is.
Well, I can tell you this, the further south you go, the less blue it is.
And really? So South Jersey is the problem.
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely. In South Jersey, Citarelli is actually ahead, okay? If you go below Camden County, which unfortunately is a machine-controlled Democrat bastion, but the further you go down the state, Citarelli is actually ahead. Now, one of the reasons why Christie won was because the chair of Camden County, Norcross, pretty much sat on his hands when Corzine went for reelection. And so the Democrats did not come out in Camden County.
Interesting. Is that because of some kind of personal feud they had, or he just didn't like the man?
It was an arrangement between Christie and Norcross.
Interesting.
This is pretty well known.
Interesting.
Yes, this is pretty well known. Now, what is going to happen, and, you know, the extent to which Camden County is going to come out for Murphy that is something to watch. However, you have to remember that the overwhelming majority of the voters are in North Jersey.
But there are
some key Republican counties like Morris County and Monmouth County and Ocean County that if they come out big, if Republicans come out big in those key counties, it can make an enormous difference. And this is part of what drove Christie's upset victory over Corzine. That and the fact that, of course, Christie was immensely appealing and that Christie totally flattened Corzine in the debate.
Yeah, personality-wise. And I can see that happening between Chitterelli and Murphy. Dan, it's always fantastic to have you on because I can't think of anyone who knows more about a state that I love and that I wish only good things for than you. And the next time I am here, if I am here, I will definitely want to have you on. But,
you
be well and keep fighting the good fight over there in our neighbor next door, okay? This is the
And you too, Christine.
This is the great Dan Cerucci. Visit his blog at dancerucci.blogspot.com or Google him. He is ubiquitous. He's fabulous. He's a wonderful person. And I'm always happy when I can have him on air. And now, I am so excited. I so admire and respect my next guest. I have listened to her on Chris's show for many a day, and I'm very happy to actually be able to speak with her and to ask her a few questions. And that would be the great Emerald Robinson, who is the White House correspondent for Newsmax. Before we speak to Emerald, I want to play for you just a tiny little clip from somebody's chief of staff.
More than 100 American citizens were left behind when the last military flight left Kabul earlier this week. What is their status right now? Have any gotten out, and how many are still there?
We believe it's around 100. We're in touch with all of them who we've identified on a regular basis. Obviously, we're hopeful that in the coming days, the Qataris will be able to resume air service out of Kabul. And if they do, we're obviously going to look to see if Americans can be part of those flights. We are going to find ways to get them, the ones that want to leave, to get them out of Afghanistan.
Emerald Robinson, welcome to the program. So glad to be able to talk to you this morning. Is she there? I think we might have a little bit of a technical glitch.
You know what? I have the mute button on.
Hi. It's good to talk to you.
It's already a long week. It's only a Wednesday.
I was going to say, I finally get a chance to talk to Emerald and I can't hear anything, which is terrible. Anyway, it's so great to talk to you. Just to give you a little bit of background on me, I am an immigration lawyer and I've been doing some work trying to get U.S. citizens and green card holders over here from Afghanistan. So you can imagine my reaction to Ron Klain and Tony Blinken's comments about American efforts. I have a question for you, since you're so, you know, up close and personal with this. How has the White House been reacting to the justified criticism of their efforts in getting and in evacuating people who are still desperate to get out of Afghanistan and who are being tracked and targeted by the Taliban right now? How are they reacting to that criticism?
Well, they're really not reacting to that criticism so much. They're still creating, both the White House, the State Department, so this isn't across the Biden administration tactic, they're sticking with this narrative that it was the most successful airlift in history, the largest relocation. In fact, about, I think it was a couple of days ago, the State Department, it probably was Monday, the State Department sent out this press release touting its efforts and how successful it was and how much work it had done in getting Americans out. And it was kind of surreal because that press release came in at about the same time that I was fielding phone calls from sources who were, you know, these retired military members who were forming their own groups, identifying Americans and SIV applicants who are stuck there, can't get the State Department to respond to them, and are doing this on their own in a private way. And then the State Department sends out this press release on how successful they've been. And that is largely what we're seeing from the White House. So it's often what we see from the Biden administration, that they don't even answer the question that's being asked, right? They answer the question that they want to answer, which was not asked. So they don't address the fallout of the withdrawal. They just constantly go back to the American polling of voter sentiment on the original plan to withdraw, the idea of getting troops out of Afghanistan. And they're sticking to it because they feel like, and I know you understand this, Christine, they feel like the media will eventually drop it. And as long as they stick to this, they'll make it through it and they won't have to answer for it.
You're so right, Emerald. We were talking earlier, the deflection first to the Texas abortion law, now the deflection to climate change, you know, with the Biden's visit to New Jersey and New York yesterday. They want to talk about everything but, you know, what's happening. What do you, you know, I want to get your impression. Maybe it was just me, but when Tony Blinken was up there saying, we're going to get out every American who wants to get out, I was thinking to myself, what American wants to live under Taliban rule? I mean, did anybody ever push back against that saying? Well, do you know of any Americans who actually said they'd like to set up camp in, you know, Kandahar or anything? It's crazy. It's just crazy.
There have actually been some reporters asked that question at both the State Department and Pentagon, and they haven't given them an answer. And from talking to those people, those sources that I've been speaking to, every American that they identify definitely wants out. And also, there's a disparity in the number that the Biden administration is suggesting is the number of Americans still there and what we're hearing. Now, there's no conclusive number, and you've probably heard this too since you're an immigration lawyer, and I'm sure you're talking to a ton of people as you work on this as well. There are the different groups working, and they have different names, and there's different rosters among these groups, and they're trying to coalesce their resources, put together the names they have into one master list between these different private groups and create their own data, their own database of Americans and allies who are there that are wanting to get out. And they feel, based on what they've already seen and what they have and how they've been comparing, it's a much greater number than the State Department is suggesting.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I'm thank you for pointing that out, because, you know, there's this misinformation. It you know, and I'll defer to you on this, but it just seems that every kind of official communique that we're getting from the White House is just, it's incorrect. It's factually incorrect. And the fact that the government is, you know, now we have an email leak about the government likely actually State Department blocking private evacuations with the excuse that, well, we don't know who the people are, the nature of the people are that they're trying to get out, is just really, really shocking. When you have private organizations who are doing vetting and who are, you know, fairly certain that the people that they're trying to get out are either SIV or green card holders or family members of, you know, green card holders in the United States. I've been dealing with them up and down. It appears to me that the State Department has simply just abdicated any responsibility any longer for, and they're just sort of pushing everything back on the Trump administration. Have you heard this? By saying, well, you know, they didn't process the visas quickly enough, or, mm-hmm. you know, you had Stephen Miller trying to suppress processing of the, it's old news. They're not, the buck does not stop here, mm-hmm. apparently, with them.
Well, so, yeah, the issue of processing has been going on all the way since the Obama administration, and that's something that is becoming very clear, is that there are a lot of these SIV applicants who were truly qualified for evacuation, qualified for the special immigrant visa that applied well before the Trump administration and could not get it through. It was just very slow. And it's very interesting. I talked to a lot of former Trump officials about how they would have done this differently. They said they had a whole plan on how to do this, and it was very different, and that the Biden administration scrapped it completely. on getting the right people out. The Biden administration airlifted a lot of people out, but what we now know is they didn't necessarily airlift those people who qualified to come, the people who had actually helped U.S. troops and the U.S. government in Afghanistan. It was very interesting. I talked to a former Trump immigration official, and he said, look, you know, it was actually easier before 2009 to get the people who helped and their families out of Afghanistan. But then Congress passed this law in 2009 that expanded, you know, who qualified for these SIVs. So, say, the janitor who worked on a base here and there to qualify. So it made it much broader. And then it increased the red tape, though, the process by which they would get people out. And he said, now you're seeing that sort of break down and become cumbersome. And they were going to address that with their withdrawal and getting the people who they felt really, truly qualified out and their family members. So it's also easy to say coulda, shoulda, woulda, but it does sound like they did have more of a plan. Whereas the Biden administration, we heard that phone call, or saw the transcript of the phone call with Biden and Ashraf Ghani on July 23rd, in which Biden was basically saying, whether it's true or not, pretend you guys have it under control, that the Taliban isn't taking over. And instead of starting to evacuate people at greater and accelerated rates.
Yeah, that was absolutely shocking. And you're 100% correct. I mean, I've been doing this work for 25 years. I worked under the Obama administration doing immigration law, and I remember that there was a significant slowdown in SIV visas and any kind of special immigrant visas for these groups. So and who was vice president during those years? Joe Biden. So, mm-hmm. I mean, he's been involved in two major fiascos with respect to these Afghani allies. And I mean, what kind of sense do you get when you're in the press room with Jen Psaki and, you know, dealing with these other, with the communications office, with the White House? Does it seem to you, as it seems to so many of us lay individuals, that there's a lot of hypersensitivity on the part of the administration, that they're almost acting as if they shouldn't be asked these questions, or is that just me and my own sense of I'm so into this right now, I'm willing to just see bad things with this administration regardless. But it just seems that they're just willing to push everything back.
No, you're absolutely right. They have a little temper tantrum when they get any kind of pushback, and it's not even hard pushback. It's just asking the obvious questions, and they did not expect for anyone in the corporate press, the legacy media, to question them on whatever they did, on their agenda, on, you know, the withdrawal from it. They just did not expect pushback. And I think that they got very spoiled on the campaign, which granted, even, you know, in the Obama administration, corporate media acts very different for a Democrat and a Republican administration anytime. But this has been particularly bad since the Biden campaign. They let him stay protected in the basement. They didn't ask the obvious questions then that should have been asked. So Jen Psaki and the rest of the Biden team got very comfortable with this, and they can't believe now that the press is actually in some ways holding them accountable. They just didn't expect it. And I'll tell you, during that campaign, they made it very clear to reporters, if you reported on Hunter Biden, if you reported on the laptop, if you questioned the president's mental capacity, if they got in the White House, which they ultimately did, you would be frozen out. You would face the consequences. And I will tell you that people who have reported on Hunter Biden, by and large, have not been allowed access to President Biden's press conferences. For the most part.
I believe that. And no one's talking about Hunter Biden today. I mean, you know, there are more important things to criticize President Biden about right now other than his son. But speaking of sons, I wanted to ask you this. What was the reaction among the press to Biden's constant references to Beau when he was dealing with the deaths of you know, the 13 military, when he was at Dover, and when he would constantly raise the issue of, oh, I understand, I feel your pain, you know, I have my son passed away. You know, it was a discordant note that I saw. And I was wondering if in the press corps with your colleagues, if you noticed that they had any reaction to that, if they thought that that was inappropriate.
Only the members of the press who are married to veterans or military.
Mm, that's interesting.
Or have, you know, military. There's not many with military children, but there are several who are married to military members and veterans, and that really did not sit well with them. One, and I definitely wouldn't, you know, say their name, but one member said that's almost akin to stolen valor.
Yeah. Exactly. That's what I was thinking as well. It's almost piggybacking on, you know, God bless Bo Biden, but he did not die in combat. You know, he died tragically of cancer prematurely. So it just seemed completely inappropriate. Emerald, it is such a pleasure to speak to you.
It is so good to meet you, talk to you over the radio.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm a fangirl, and I'm just so glad that you are there in the press corps, keeping them honest. I appreciate all the work that you're doing, and again, thank you. And I'll be listening to you next Wednesday when you're back on with Chris. He'll be back on Monday. So thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us today.
Thanks, Christine. And I do have to say before we go, I loved your tweet on AOC.
Thanks. Yeah, that was a shocker. Take care. Take care.
You too, bye.
Bye-bye. That was the great Emerald Robinson, Newsmax White House correspondent. We will be right back. God bless the trees, Mr. Robinson. Heaven holds a place for those who pray. Hey, hey, hey. Hey, hey.
Philadelphia's Morning Answer with Chris DeGaulle. Download our free mobile app. Go to quicklinks at 990theanswer.com.
So, this is me again. In the upcoming hour, we have two great guests. Ben Manis is going to come on and talk about a recent piece that he wrote for Broad and Liberty about, some interesting healthcare officials, one of whom used to work for the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. And in the 8:30 segment, we've got Chuck Peruto, who is the GOP candidate seeking to take the spot of Larry Krasner. Let us all hope. Let us all pray and let us all vote if we can to make that a reality, because Larry Krasner has done horrific things to and for the city of Philadelphia. And even if you don't live in Philadelphia, in this listening audience, you are impacted by Philadelphia. There is nothing that happens in Philadelphia that, well, let's put it this way. What happens in Philadelphia does not stay in Philadelphia. So we're going to talk about that. We will be right back on Philadelphia's 990 AM, The Answer.
WNTP Philadelphia. Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer. Download our free mobile app at 990theanswer.com. For more than a decade, he's been Philadelphia's destination for news, opinion, and passion.
I am a devoted listener every day, 3 hours, kids in the car, the whole thing.
Hey, good morning, Chris. I always love your show.
I just love your show. Just love it.
This is Philadelphia's Morning Answer with Chris DeGaulle on Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer, and 990theanswer.com.
Welcome back to the third and final hour of the show. This is Christine Flower sitting in for Chris DeGaulle on Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer. The numbers to reach us are 610-850-0990. You can stream us on 990theanswer.com. In this segment, we're going to be talking to my friend Ben Manis, who is an ubiquitous writer. His writings can be seen at Philadelphia Weekly, at Broad and Liberty. I know he's been published in many of the print publications in the Delaware Valley as well. And he had a piece at Broad and Liberty, which I found very interesting. And it interesting because it talked about something that, you know, we're familiar with, the malfeasance of Rachel Levin, who used to be the Secretary of Health in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, and then she went on to bigger and better things. Now she's with the federal government in the cabinet, Assistant Secretary of Health for President Biden. She was confirmed, I think it was in July, I think, or no, March, when the confirmation process was. She had a little bit of a set-to with Rand Paul, who's really been a superstar at a lot of these confirmation hearings. And now Ben has written about a second appointment to the cabinet, the Department of Health and Human Services. And it would be a gentleman by the name of Robert Gordon, who was Governor Gretchen Whitmer of Michigan's former Secretary of Health. And he's also been appointed to a position at the same rank and level as Secretary Levin. And Ben wrote a great column about the various scandals that have followed, tracked these individuals who nonetheless have been raised up, elevated by this White House, which, you know, not begs the question exactly, but which causes you to wonder what are the criteria that this White House uses to nominate and then to hire individuals of relative mediocrity when you look at their records. Without further ado, let's go to the author of this great piece at Broad and Liberty, and that would be Ben Mattis. Hey, Ben, thanks for being a guest this morning.
Hey, Chris. Good to talk to you again. How you doing?
I'm very good. I really loved your piece. It was great. And
thanks.
I love the fact that you keep reminding us about Rachel Levin, but I was a little surprised to hear about Gordon. Can you walk us through a little bit about who he is and how he got his job and, you know, what his problem is and, why he left Michigan?
Yeah. Yeah, and you did the yeoman's work on that intro because you have to look at the background with Levin. So when you look at Levin, Levin was picked to be Governor Wolf's health secretary, largely, and everyone has telegraphed this, largely because she was going to be the first transgender appointment to any state cabinet in U.S. history. And Wolf is that kind of woke, and he said, why not? And the problem with that being Levin's background's mainly in psychological health and pediatric psychological treatment, right?
Yeah.
We had the biggest pandemic come up in 2020. And someone without a public health management background was thrust into this. And what many of the listeners are thinking is, well, this is like New York, in New York's program where they had all the elderly people go back into nursing homes instead of going into sterile hospitals where they could infect other old people with COVID because they didn't know what it was yet. Well, here's the problem with that. Most people do not know that Rachel Levin's policy was the first in the nation. So the policy that Cuomo got in trouble for, that Janice Dean has been doing tremendous work in getting the word out and not letting Cuomo off the hook because they found some old sexual harassment problems to oust him with. Well, guess what? A whole week before New York instituted that program, Pennsylvania did, and it was Rachel Levin's program.
That's fascinating. I did not know that we were the ones who actually, she was the one who actually created that program.
Right, and we were also the first to challenge that program. So the state medical examiners, the state coroners association, came together in March of 2020 and said, hey, you're reporting death numbers, probable deaths from COVID, that we did not write, because everybody knows that the state coroner is the one who writes a cause of death on a report that goes to the state for your death certificate. So some of those counties that were reporting it in the rural parts of Pennsylvania hadn't had any overnight deaths And they were being reported by Levin and her presser the next morning as deaths from that county. And they're sitting there going, I didn't sign any death certificates from the night before. Where are these deaths coming from? Are you trying to get federal money? I don't know. But she got in trouble for that. And then a month later, she got in trouble because it came out that on the eve of her great program, where all the elderly people who were infected were going to be sharing the HVAC system with the people who were not sick and then soon to be sick and dead, well, she pulled her mother out of that care facility and put her in a nice hotel, you know, to basically escape her own plan. So all this comes out. She leaves the Wolf administration. Normally what happens in a state is you do the term that your, you know, your rabbi or, you know, in this case, Governor Wolf, puts you in for, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Nope, she left early when Biden got in and was appointed and confirmed in March of 2021 as the Deputy Undersecretary of HHS, the Assistant Secretary of HHS, reporting directly to Javier Becerra. We're going to get to him in a minute. So that's interesting because that very same month, March of 2021, Robert Gordon was fired by Governor Gretchen Whitmer in Michigan. Robert Gordon was an attorney for Obama's education department. He was an Obama appointee before he went to Michigan. That has no health background whatsoever.
Unbelievable.
Never been a doctor or never been in a public health setting, never even been in a healthcare corporation. The man was a lawyer in the Obama administration for education. And all of a sudden, he is a health secretary in a very purple battleground state during an election year where we had a pandemic. And he gets fired the very same month that Levin gets confirmed. And ironically, he gets fired not because he created this horrible policy that they adopted, basically Levin's policy in Michigan, that killed a lot of people and kept people out of business in a state that, you know, needs work, right? Well, no, she didn't get fired. He didn't get fired for that. He got fired because a great reporter in Detroit named Charlie LaDuff filed a lawsuit to open up the records and get the communications between Whitmer and Gordon about the lockdowns to light. And he was the fall guy, and he got fired.
Wow, okay. That's crazy.
Well, 2 weeks ago, so this is the this is August 18th, the Biden administration announces, hey, Gordon's also going to be an assistant secretary for HHS reporting to Javier Becerra. Javier Becerra is a former California attorney general. Again, no health background whatsoever. He is the secretary of Health and Human Services for the United States. Three of the five states in the United States, out of the whole 50, that were under investigation for their reckless, dangerous, and deadly handling of COVID were California, Michigan, and Pennsylvania, leaving only New York and New Jersey, which are kind of radioactive thanks to Cuomo. So, yeah.
That's amazing. And the way you tied it together, Ben, was masterful. I love, I was sort of smiling when you said Rachel Levin got in trouble for a variety of things. She got herself in such trouble that she ended up with a federal position, you know, a position that, you know, she had to be nominated for, advise and consent. It just seems that there is no accountability. You can do as much bad as you possibly can. But if you know the right people and your voter registration is the right color, then there is no accountability. And it's outrageous when this is happening during a pandemic and we're dealing with healthcare officials or, you know, public officials that deal with our healthcare. It's just it's outrageous. And congratulations, kudos to you for doing that deep dive investigating, because it doesn't seem like anybody is really willing to do that except for a few individuals and a few media sites that are willing to host that kind of information.
Yeah, and we have a few here in Philly, and of course, you know, I did this teaming up with, you know, Charlie LaDuff in Detroit, but the point in this matter isn't the mere failing up. I mean, anyone who's been watching Democratic politics for their life knows failing up is something done when people are in charge. The question now is why? And this is important because, people have been fired. And when Levin got confirmed, everyone assumed it was because she was a quote-unquote first. But what's the excuse with Gordon? What's the excuse with Becerra? Why is nobody looking at the nursing home deaths? And more importantly, when you're in a presidential administration, and Jen Psaki's pressers really show that there is just no thought to optics, we have a current situation with the last election where optics lead to conspiracy theory. Well, hey, two of the states where the elections were heavily challenged and thought to be corrupt because they opened up mail-in ballots due to health policy have promoted people who wouldn't pass a normal background check for a police department, for a rookie cop position or a rookie firefighter position because they were recently fired, and now they are leading at the federal government. So, of course, what people on the internet are going to say is, hey, why? Is this a contract? Are they being, rewarded for keeping quiet?
Yeah.
What's the circumstance? And I think the lawsuit in Michigan is going to, open up a Pandora's box because a lot of those communications between Whitmer and Gordon and maybe the incoming administration are going to come to light.
That's interesting. Are you going to follow up on this story, I'm sure, because this is something, this could be a bombshell. So many things are coming out now when, at the time when the person was in office, like Cuomo or Levin, it seems like, yeah, there was some mention made of these things, and then they were sort of brushed under the rug under the excuse that, well, we're in a pandemic, we're in an emergency situation.
Yes.
Let's not worry about that. You're being partisan. You're being this. You're being that. It had nothing to do with being partisan. It had to do with, as you very well noted, there are unqualified people, possibly people with with criminal backgrounds who are in federal office. What kind of vetting is done? Advise and consent, or is it just advise and assent? Advise and close your eyes.
It wasn't good, but it made sense with Levin because Biden was, sought to be pandering to the woke by appointing the first transgender appointee to the federal government.
And at least she was a doctor. A pediatrician.
Yeah, at least there was a pediatrician there. It made more sense, but again, a doctor is a doctor, but if a doctor is proven to be a failure and worse, possibly corrupt, and when I say possibly corrupt, I'm not talking about taking an envelope full of cash in a dark alley. I'm talking about, hey, if this program wasn't good for your mother,
yep,
why were you making everyone else's mother deal with it?
That was horrific. And that she didn't bear any kind of penalty for that. That is just, with everybody else's parents dying.
The state house is still investigating that. The state house is still looking at that.
Well, that's only because there's Republicans, and that's because it's run by the Republicans. If the Democrats were in the majority in the state house, there would be absolutely no investigation.
Same things happen in Michigan. And the same thing should be happening in New York, New Jersey, and California as well. So we have to stay on them because, the issue really wasn't the terrible policy. The issue was the lack of transparency. If the state coroners have a process for reporting dead people, and that process was in the dark of night, circumvented by the state so that they can make a pandemic a catch-all for voting policy, lack of reporting policy. These are a serious issue. And that is what people are investigating now. And that's what we need to look at on the federal level. So Gordon, and this is why people need to start calling, folks like Casey and Toomey, or Booker, if you're in Jersey. Yeah, that's going to work. you need to call because he hasn't been confirmed yet.
Yeah,
and again, if the guy just got fired over a myriad of suspicious policies, why are we talking about him walking right into confirmation?
Excellent point.
I mean, you look at mainly just the economic stuff. Becerra makes it to the Secretary of HHS from being a state attorney general in California. Why? Two reasons. One, he backed Obamacare and he filed a suit for it. Two, he backed the COVID lockdown policies that have paralyzed California.
imagine what will happen if Josh Shapiro, our attorney general, becomes governor of Pennsylvania. Then imagine the conduit to a federal position and his contact with, I mean, especially, God forbid, if the Democrats take the White House for yet another 4 years. I mean, when you mentioned the whole thing about filing, law protecting or defending against lawsuits against Obamacare and, the type of malfeasance on that part, the first name that came to mind from my end was Josh Shapiro. You thinking about writing anything about him?
We're in the midst of it now. I mean, you have to look at that governor's race very closely because he feels that he is the heir apparent for the governor of the Commonwealth. And the thing you need to look at for Shapiro is not only how vocal he was in the COVID policies and the voting scandals, very, very good at parroting the national talking points of the DNC as a state attorney general. And you know what? You almost expect that. You saw that with Letitia James in New York, right over the border. But the thing about Letitia James is she also worked the Cuomo case. And she also worked, the Rochester City corruption case. Josh Shapiro is great at parroting all these local talking points. But when, Krasner's office has a guy shoot another guy in a graveyard after their sex tryst went sideways, all we could do was prosecute the guy for misdemeanor pandering.
Well, I had Martina White on yesterday, and I was talking to her also about Shapiro, and she made the point, a good point, that the legislature, in a bipartisan move, gave Shapiro the right to rein in Larry Krasner and to basically be sort of like a check on his malfeasance, his failure to prosecute gun crimes. And at the first town hall that he appeared at, when someone asked him a question about that legislation, the person was criticizing the legislation, Shapiro basically backed off and said, "Oh, well, no, I won't use that." I mean, it's ridiculous.
Actions speak louder than words.
Absolutely.
And the truth is, that piece of legislation was just put in place so that he could pick and choose and circumvent, which he already could by Pennsylvania law, the cases that he could pull off the city's desk and prosecute. Because Krasner, as we all know, isn't prosecuting anything. So, he had that right under this law, but forget that for a second. Because we already saw how, U.S. Attorney McSween was doing that from the federal pulpit by finding, Brady violations for these, multiple robbers and murderers that were being let loose by Krasner.
Right.
Let's look heavily at Shapiro's track record in prosecuting corruption here in the city of Philadelphia. I'm not seeing it.
No.
I'm just not. Seth Williams picked up the sting case from Kathleen Kane. It was a lob for Shapiro's office. And there is literally a scandal a week coming out of the Krasner administration.
Yeah.
Most recently, Lamar Stewart, who's got a track record, we published it in the Weekly, and Big Trial, Ralph is publishing it, how this guy pulls people over without police authority, and he's not just doing it for the FBI agent that caught him, but he's doing it for, single black women driving to work.
Yeah. No, Ben, I mean, there is a litany of problems with Krasner. And in fact, my next guest after you is Chuck Peruto. Hopefully he'll be giving some ideas as to how he plans to beat Krasner in an overwhelmingly Democrat city where the people who happen to be the victims of crime tended to vote for overwhelmingly voted for Larry Krasner in the last primary. So, we have our work cut out for us, but
letting him get away with it become governor.
No.
No. We have a problem with checks and balances. And the thing you have to watch, whether it's Barletta or McSwain or Mastriano, you have to watch which one of them comes out with talking points, looking to codify transparency, looking to give the inspectors general authority, looking to put their own stuff in the street. If they're willing to do that, then these are the people you need to vote for. Because Shapiro, by his own action, is not willing to do that. He's letting everyone walk.
You're absolutely right. Ben, you're great. That was Ben Manis, He writes for numerous publications. Read his piece at Broad and Liberty, and we will be right back.
Hey, take us with you on your phone. Download our free mobile app now at 990theanswer.com.
Welcome back. This is Christine Flowers filling in for the great Chris DeGaulle on Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer. In the last segment, had a great conversation with Ben Manis, and we were talking about a wide variety of things, but we, you know, sort of serendipitously and fortuitously fell upon the topic of crime in Philadelphia, about Josh Shapiro, who was given the key to the city and given the opportunity to really rein in Larry Krasner, who's been doing absolutely nothing about increasing crime violence in the city of Philadelphia. And yesterday, you will remember when I was speaking to Representative Martina White, we discussed GOP challenges to Larry Krasner and what options we have in the city of Philadelphia. And again, those of you in the listening audience who do not live in Philadelphia still have a dog in this race, still have a stake in this, because what happens in Philadelphia does not stay in Philadelphia. Everything that happens in Philadelphia impacts the suburbs. It's like that pebble that goes into the pond, and the ripples will go far and will touch distant individuals. And so, for that reason, I'm really happy to invite onto the show this morning Charles Chuck Peruto, who is challenging Larry Krasner for the position as district attorney in the city of Philadelphia. And I am very happy to have Chuck on the line. Hey, Chuck, welcome in.
Good morning. Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Very happy to have you. First of all, I spoke to Representative White yesterday, chair of the Philly GOP, and she indicated that, the enthusiasm that the party has for you, and they were going to do everything they possibly could to buttress you. So my first question for you is, what are your plans in the next 2 months as we are really honing in on the election? How are you making yourself heard? Where are you being heard? Will there be a debate, or is Larry Krasner too scared to face you? And what is your intention to make yourself known to the people of the city of Philadelphia and the Delaware Valley?
Well, first and foremost, we have the fifth largest metropolitan area in the United States. We have a district attorney, a progressive district attorney, who wants to blame the rise in crime like it's happening everywhere and it's out of the control of crime and punishment. That's because in all other major cities who got swept up in this progressive movement and elected a progressive DA, he's comparing his stats to the stats of his compadres, and they're all complicit in the rise in crime because this is a failed experiment. Progressive DAs who don't want to punish criminals, they want to defend them, they want to pat them on the back and say, no, Johnny, you can't do that again. It's not working. And I don't know what it's going to take to convince him of this, but obviously he doesn't want to face the music in a debate. If I were him, I wouldn't either. He is hiding. He knows that I will absolutely kick his butt from one end of the debate to the other. We've had jury trials together. And I have the statistics that I got from his own staff that will absolutely expose him. And I know, and I said from the beginning that I ran as a Republican early on, even though I wouldn't run against Carlos Vega, because I knew early on that he would never, ever debate me. So I wanted to get as much exposure back then in the town forums that we were doing together. And he would run and hide. I don't blame him for running and hiding because he has a lot to hide from. But he has to understand that I'm ready to expose. And the number one thing I want to expose is his touting of his conviction rate when it comes to guns and shootings. He boasts in an election year, by the way, in the, his own statistics say it was a 50% conviction rate, 50% conviction rate in the first 2 years. But in this last year, he's claiming it's 85%. Well, guess what? If you offer a defendant time into 23 months where he's only served 3 months and you let him out of jail after doing a shooting, he pleads guilty, you get out of jail. That counts as a conviction. That is absolute nonsense, and I have 176 cases that I want to expose him on, but he won't take the podium and debate me. He is basically saying, I have $2 million in the bank. I could beat you with advertising. I don't have to face the truth. It's a slap in the face to the Philadelphia voter who needs to have information, who needs to have him exposed. And if he is doing the right thing, if he doesn't have anything to hide from, why doesn't he debate? Why can't he stand up for himself instead of his packaged advertisements? Why can't he confront this head on and answer questions in a debate from neutral journalists?
Chuck,
he won't do that.
Chuck, if he's...
He won't do that.
Yeah.
He'll never do that.
Chuck, if... So it's a given. He's not going to debate. He doesn't have to debate. And you rightfully state that he has been hiding out. Jack Stolzheimer held a news conference to discuss the issue of crime control and the dropping crime rate in Chester in Delaware County. I'm going to have Jack on tomorrow. Larry Krasner was invited. Jim Kenney was invited. No Philadelphia authority showed up in Delaware County, which is our neighbor county in Philadelphia. Delaware and Philadelphia are the two closest counties. So, I mean, that gives you some idea that they're not even willing to show up for a Democrat colleague who's talking about gun control and crime reduction efforts. So what is your plan then? I mean, I understand you're going out and you're speaking to community groups. How do you think that you're going to be able to get out the vote? Because we spoke about this before. So many of the neighborhoods, at least in the primary, that have a large proportion of victims, the people who are victimized by gun violence and other violence in the city of Philadelphia, those neighborhoods went overwhelmingly for Krasner against Vega, which is counterintuitive. You wonder why they would do that. It's like the Stockholm syndrome. I'm going to vote for the guy who's essentially putting my life in danger. How are you going
to
convince them?
It's easy to answer. First of all, he is bribing the voters for their vote. And here's how I define that. When you have loved ones in prison for life, when you have loved ones in prison with lengthy prison terms, Larry Krasner gives you hope. In these crime-ridden areas, people are affected both ways. One, they have family members in jail. And two, they have family members who were killed. So they're basically torn. They can't bring their loved one back from the dead, but they can bring their loved one home from jail, and Larry Krasner gives them hope. However, the older citizens in these areas, the more mature citizens, are 100% behind me. I go to these churches and speak, and the one question I'm met with from the younger audience is, what am I going to do to expand the conviction integrity office? My answer to that is very simple. Larry Krasner has confused the voters of what the district attorney's office is. I am not running for public defender. I am running for district attorney, the chief law enforcement officer of the county. If someone brings me a case, if a defense lawyer brings me a case and says, this case is riddled with problems, this guy should never have been convicted, we believe he's innocent, I will take a look at it. We will keep the conviction integrity unit intact with no plans to expand it. It's already costing the taxpayers millions of dollars. If anything, I'll trim it back. But we will take a look at these cases. We're not going to do the work for them. We're not going to substitute our opinion of what we would have done as a juror for the opinion of the jurors who watched the evidence and saw the demeanor of these witnesses and voted to convict, and then the appellate courts voting to sustain that conviction and keep that conviction, and then the next appellate court doing the same thing, and then the governor denying clemency or a pardon. These things are not just handled by one, two people. They pass through a series of tests. And to impose your will over all of them, especially the province of the jury, is illegal and improper, because the jury in this country is the ultimate spokesman of what occurs. The jury hears the evidence, weighs the evidence, decides credibility, and votes. We cannot take that from them under most circumstances, but Larry Krasner believes we can do that. As far as Jack Stoltzheimer in Delaware County, Jack Stoltzheimer believes that crimes need to be punished.
Exactly.
And as far as Larry Krasner and not helping fellow Democrats, there's so many facets to your question. As far as him not helping fellow Democrats, people have to understand, Larry Krasner is not a Democrat. He is a progressive. They are starting their own wing. They are starting with the Working Families Party. This is not the Democratic Party that Philadelphians know it to be.
That's a good
point,
Chuck.
He is trying to take over his entire party. So he's not a fellow Democrat, so I'm not surprised.
Let me interrupt
to see that
you.
He's not helping.
And let me interrupt you, because I want to highlight that point. You make a very strong, good point. I was a Democrat for 30-some years, and I voted in Philadelphia. I voted in Delaware County, depending on where I was living. I left the Democrat Party before you did, primarily because of the extremism of that party, which is now represented by someone like Larry Krasner. So I would agree. And you're talking right now to a highly conservative audience. This audience, I would say 9 out of 10 people listening are probably registered, if not independent, Republican. However, there is an understanding that we need a two-party system, two strong parties, but two traditional parties, not something that is so radical like the Working Family Party, like the party of Helen Gim, like the party of Larry Krasner, like the party that Jim Kenney pretends to belong to, although I still think he has, you know, I think in his heart he really is an old-style Democrat, but he needs to sort of curry favor with the people who are the loudest voices in the city of Philadelphia. So I guess my question would be for you, having been a Democrat, now being a Republican, how do you see the role of district attorney? Do you see it, even though you have to be elected into it, do you see it as a bipartisan or apartisan office that serves both Republicans and Democrats and independents equally? Or do you see it, like Larry Krasner sees it, as some kind of special organization that caters only to those who believe in his very radical value set and value system?
The Office of District Attorney is a law enforcement office. We don't look at party. We don't look at color. We look at victims. I want to switch clients. I want to represent the Commonwealth in representing crime victims. Here is how you approach that. Number one, you stay in touch with your victims. You make sure that they have the cell phone numbers of the assistant district attorney assigned to that case all the way through. You make sure that they get to court. You make sure that you pay their parking, that you pick them up. You get them to court. It is your job to present evidence. And if you don't have a willing participant to come in, you got to go get them. A lot of times in these crime-ridden areas, people don't want to come to court because of the no-snitch policy. Well, guess what? We're not going to make it your choice. A subpoena is a court order commanding you to appear so that justice can be done. Justice will be done under my administration, because these hoodlums that want to run our city are not going to be doing it any further. I want to have witnesses get there, testify, even if it's reluctantly, or they will be held in contempt. I haven't seen a witness held in contempt since Larry Krasner became district attorney. These people can't make these decisions for themselves. And if they are truly afraid,
then I want to make the bail so mind-boggling for these defendants and anyone who acts on their behalf to not only be in custody, but I want a grand jury these cases, which is another thing he has not used. The grand jury is something that the public doesn't really know the function of. We have to utilize the grand jury to investigate who is intimidating witnesses. Why are there intimidating witnesses? What is their reward? What is their back-end reward? The criminals cannot control the streets like they're doing now. We cannot be nice to little Johnny when little Johnny has a gun under his bed, he has a gun at his friend's house, and he has a gun under his driver's seat. Johnny belongs in jail because he's preying upon the rest of us. People are afraid. And once again, minorities get slapped in the face because they live in areas where no one wants to buy the home. The home value will never rise like everyone else's home value will rise, and therefore they will stay impoverished for their entire life, not being able to retire, because they're buying into this progressive nonsense. They're the ones that are getting hurt the most, because the biggest asset that you have in life is your home. If nobody wants it, then you're out of luck. And that has to be educated. And that's what I'm telling these groups in these minority areas. You are being preyed upon. You're being used. And
now, Chuck, we're unfortunately, we're up against a clock. But how can people reach out to you? Do you have a website? Do you have a campaign office? How can people donate to you? How can they get in touch with you? What's your public contact information so we can put it out there? I'm sure that there are people in the listening audience who want to
It's very
connect.
Simple. It's PerutoForDA.com. There's no spaces in it. It's just PerutoForDA.com. You can go on there and volunteer. You can go in there and donate. You can see where I've been, where we're going. And honestly, our campaign needs an influx of cash because I'm realizing now how important his staff is, because I'm trying to do everything myself. And I'm just really ready to collapse, but I'm in it to win it, and I'm going to be there up until November 2nd. I don't care how much time it takes me.
Well, you've got the passion for it, like your dad. So PerutoForDA.com. Those of you in the listening audience who want to contact him, want to donate, want to guarantee that we can get rid of Larry Krasner, that's how you can do it. This is a viable way. Chuck Peruto, I really appreciate you being on, and much luck to you in your campaign.
Thank you.
This is Christine Flowers, Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer. We'll be back. Welcome back. This is Christine Flowers sitting in for Chris DeGaulle on Philadelphia's 990 AM, The Answer. You know, I appreciate talk radio. I love talk radio. I've been involved with talk radio at some level or another for about 15 years. I actually started by being a caller to several overnight talk shows, and that segued into doing some fill-in work and then some shows and then more fill-in work. But I think the major reason that I really have always loved talk radio is that I knew that I was a conservative from the beginning. And in an area like Philadelphia, it's kind of hard to have a venue where you could, a safe space where you could express your opinions and not feel that you're going to be sanctioned for those opinions. And that's the reason why and that's not to say that talk radio only allows conservative voices, because, quite frankly, I'm not as conservative as some people might like me to be. I believe that there is a space for dissent in talk radio that does not exist in other areas of the media and or business. And, the reason I'm doing this little preface is I was reading a story this morning about a video game CEO who was basically fired because of a tweet, because he tweeted approvingly of the Supreme Court's decision on the Texas law. He basically, his name is John Gibson, and he was CEO at Tripwire, And he basically tweeted this out. It's pretty innocuous. Proud of the USS Supreme Court affirming the Texas law banning abortion for babies with a heartbeat. As an entertainer, I don't get political often, yet with so many vocal peers on the other side of this issue, I felt it was important to go on the record as a pro-life game developer. That's it. That, you know, that, and that actually seems long. That may not have even all have been in his tweet itself. But it's sad when someone cannot come out and express their personal opinion. We're all about personal choice, right? Ha ha ha. Without risking their ability to make a living. We heard that yesterday when we were talking with Michael Torres about some of the parents in the piece that he wrote on CRT in Lower Merion Township. They didn't want to come out and out themselves because they had jobs. So I guess the whole point of this is to say, thank God for talk radio. Thank God for a venue where you can actually express yourself fully and fairly, which I will be doing for the next few days here as I replace the great Chris DeGaulle. I will talk to you tomorrow. This is Christine Flowers, 990 AM.
This
The Answer.
This is WNTP, Philadelphia's AM 990. The Answer, a Salem Media Group station on the NASDAQ at SALM.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.